the president saying that the Chinese have broken some of the promises that they made in recent trade negotiations.
The U.S. president imposes more tariffs on China. This is Friday, August 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, the U.S. Secretary of State talks about China and North Korea at the ASEAN meetings. You'll hear from a U.S. nuclear expert on his views of the possibility of a war over North Korea. And a populous Australian state struggles over the legalization of abortion. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S.-China trade war intensified Thursday after President Donald Trump said he would impose additional tariffs on some Chinese products. It took place a day after the two superpowers agreed to continue trade talks next month. I spoke with VOA's chief White House correspondent Steve Herman about this. As you'll hear, we did have some technical problems recording our conversation, but we think it is worthwhile for you to hear us, so please forgive us.
Ira, the president on Twitter announced on Thursday that he's going to impose a new 10% tariff on about $300 billion worth of products from China. The president saying that the Chinese have broken some of the promises that they made in recent trade negotiations. Now, these will take effect on September 1st. And it sent the stock market falling here in the United States today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closing down about 280 points, and oil prices also declined about 8%. The president was on the South Lawn a little while ago walking to the Marine One helicopter, and reporters did ask him about this, and he said, depending on what happens when negotiations resume as they're scheduled to in September, these tariffs could come off in layers, or he possibly could put more on if things don't go well.
Steve, this comes during the ASEAN meetings. The U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo is there. Could this lead to some problems, or do you think this is all planned ahead?
Well, from what the president has tweeted and the announcement we had previous that negotiations are to resume here in Washington in a month or so, I would suspect that everything is sort of on frozen, or I would suspect that everything's sort of frozen until then, unless there's some sort of a gesture from the Chinese before then. There's no anticipation of that, however. What the president said is that the Chinese had failed to follow through on a couple of promises that they had made to reduce the amount of fentanyl coming into the United States from China, and also to buy more agricultural products from American farmers.
And once again, our apology for the technical difficulties with that interview. Now, before the tariffs were announced, Secretary of State Pompeo did hold separate talks with his Chinese counterpart, Wang Yi. Their meeting comes amid tensions between the world's two largest economies in regard to a trade dispute and China's claim to large swaths of the South China Sea. In a tweet, Pompeo said he had an in-depth exchange of views with Wang, including on North Korea, adding, "When it advances U.S. interest, we are ready to cooperate with China." After the talks, Pompeo talked with reporters.
We are working with them on many fronts, but we were also very candid about the places we are hoping China will behave in ways that they are not behaving today.
Wang described the meeting as a deep communication that has helped to increase our mutual understanding. On another issue, the U.S. Secretary of State said he will not be able to meet with North Korean officials in Bangkok on the sidelines of the ASEAN summit. That came just hours after North Korea's latest ballistic missile test. And the North Koreans have again launched at least one more missile. We'll tell you more about that as we receive it.
We stand ready to continue our diplomatic conversation with the North Koreans. I regret that it looks like I'm not going to have an opportunity to do that while I'm here in Bangkok, but we're ready to go.
In the past, the annual ASEAN security meeting was used as an opportunity for talks between U.S. and North Korean officials. In a moment, you'll hear an interview I did as I asked a nuclear arms expert about the possibility of a war on the Korean Peninsula. Stay with us on VOA Asia. These are among the top stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. The chairman of Pakistan's Senate has survived a no-confidence vote that has opponents alleging political interference. China's military has released a propaganda video showing a drill of armed troops quelling a protest in Hong Kong and a thinly veiled warning to the city's pro-democracy movement. Bangladesh is grappling with its worst outbreak of dengue fever, with hospitals packed with patients as the disease spreads rapidly in the densely populated country. At least 14 people have died. More than 17,000 have come down with the virus so far this year, according to official figures. You're listening to VOA Asia. Just how dangerous is a nuclear-powered North Korea? I had a chance to discuss that this week with Joe Cerencioni, the president of the Plowshares Fund, a public grant-making foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. Can we get into a war in Korea?
Yes.
As we know, on Wednesday, they launched even more missiles, and they did it in a non-ICBM mode where it could not reach the United States. And as of Wednesday, there's been no input from the United States. Really, where do we stand there? When we talk about a game, we're talking about a game the two are playing, Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump.
Well, Kim Jong-un is like the Glenn Close character from Fatal Attraction. He will not be ignored. You know, he doesn't want to go too long without the president paying attention to him. I don't think it was any coincidence that they did these missile launches on the eve of the debate between the Democratic presidential candidates. They're looking to get attention. You may remember way back when, right before President Obama in April 2009 made his first big foreign policy speech in Prague, North Korea also tested missiles. In that case, they were intermediate range. In this case, they're short-range missiles. They can't reach us, but they can reach South Korea. Are they capable of carrying nuclear weapons? They are. Does North Korea have nuclear weapons? They do. Unlike Iran, North Korea has, we estimate, somewhere between 20 and 40 nuclear weapons that could be put on ships, on planes, or on even these short-range missiles. And we think they have long-range missiles. They've tested them twice now that could reach the United States. What does North Korea want? I think North Korea does want a deal. And they have talked with us. And the question is whether the administration can structure not a big sweeping deal that would get North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons in exchange for promises of economic aid. That's not going to happen. But on the table is an interim deal where North Korea would dismantle part of its nuclear complex, the facilities at Yongbyon, where they make plutonium, where they make enrich uranium for nuclear weapons, in exchange for some sanctions relief. That is in the cards. If there's one foreign policy achievement that I think might happen in the remainder of the Trump administration, I would predict that. It's difficult. It's hard. There's opponents in Pyongyang, in Washington, against a deal. I'm thinking of John Bolton in the United States, who doesn't want to make a deal.
National Security Advisor.
National Security Advisor, who's very much against a deal with Iran and North Korea. He's a firm believer of military force rather than negotiated agreements. But Mike Pompeo does want a deal. The Secretary of State has his own political ambitions. He wants to show that he can deliver for this president and perhaps burnish his credentials for a run sometime in the future. And President Trump wants to show that his critics are wrong, that he can deliver a deal. It is the one ray of hope I see. Could we still stumble into a war? We could, but not because either side wants it, but by miscalculation, by accident, the way things have happened in the past, a small military incident on the border, in the contested waters outside on the Korean Peninsula, could trigger an exchange, again, that nobody really wants.
Joe Cirincione, the president of the Plowshares Fund, and he was speaking with me and Carol Castiel on Press Conference USA. That program can be heard throughout the weekend on VOA. Happening now in Asia, Thailand plans to distribute about 10,000 bottles of cannabis oil next week for hospital patients. That, according to a government official, the first official use of medical marijuana since a law legalizing it came into effect this year. Remember to stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you are with us. A bill to decriminalize abortion in the only Australian state where it is illegal has been introduced in the New South Wales Parliament Thursday. Lawmakers from across the political spectrum came together to try to repeal legislation dating back more than a century. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The proposed law would allow abortion in Australia's most populous state up to 22 weeks of pregnancy. After that time, terminations would be permitted with the consent of two doctors. Abortion remains illegal in New South Wales, the only state in the country where it's outlawed. The Crimes Act of 1900 includes abortion as an offence, punishable by 10 years in prison, but prosecutions are rare. Reports suggest there is sufficient support among lawmakers for the bill to pass, but critics of reform have vowed to fight to prevent its passage. Pro-life campaigners have joined Conservative politicians and church leaders in opposition to the abortion bill. One religious leader said the proposal was sneaky and extreme, while other campaigners said women with unwanted or unexpected pregnancies should be given more support and that abortion should not be pushed as the first option. But supporters of the measure say it will protect women and give them access to safe and legal abortions. Independent lawmaker Alex Greenwich says it's a modern and carefully crafted piece of legislation.
We also make sure that there are conscientious objection provisions in place, so doctors who do not wish to perform a determination must refer on the patient for care. This bill is based on the Queensland model, which follows a robust law reform commission process.
The state of Queensland decriminalised abortion last year, while lawmakers in Tasmania approved similar laws in 2013 and in Victoria in 2008. It's estimated that 65,000 terminations are carried out across Australia each year. The last attempt to decriminalise abortion was introduced to the New South Wales Parliament in 2017, but failed to attract enough support. Opinion polls have indicated that most Australians support broad access to abortion. It's estimated that up to a third of Australian women will choose to terminate a pregnancy. Lawmakers in New South Wales are expected to make a final decision on the proposed changes by the end of next week. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, we'll have more information for you on more missile launches by North Korea. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Your requests, your dedications, and interviews and performances by your favorite music superstars. It's Border Crossings. This is Larry London. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 15 hours Universal Time on VOA or online at voanews.com. You've got control. Border Crossings, weekdays at 15 hours Universal Time at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. North Korea has carried out a new projectile launch, according to U.S. officials, adding that initial information indicated the launches were similar to two recent short-range tests carried out by Pyongyang. South Korea's military said unidentified short-range projectiles were fired at 2:59 a.m. and 3:23 a.m. local time Friday. This is VOA Asia. We check U.S. politics now. Former U.S. President Joe Biden was center stage for Wednesday's Democratic presidential debate, and Biden often found himself under attack by several of his nine rivals on stage. However, Biden was quick to counterattack in what was a freewheeling debate and also made an impassioned case that he is the Democrat best positioned to defeat President Donald Trump next year. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the second night of the second round of Democratic debates.
It was a much feistier night of debate in Detroit, with the current frontrunner, Joe Biden, facing multiple attacks from his rivals on health care, immigration, climate change, and criminal justice. But Biden also pushed back against his critics, including California Senator Kamala Harris, over their competing health care plans.
And to be very blunt and to be very straightforward, you can't beat President Trump with double talk on this plan.
So I think that you should really think about what you're saying, but be reflective and understand that the people of America want access to health care and do not want costs to be their barrier to getting it.
Biden also clashed over immigration with former Obama cabinet secretary Julian Castro. Castro wants to decriminalize migrant border crossings.
If you cross the border illegally, you should be able to be sent back. It's a crime.
First of all, Mr. Vice President, it looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand challenged Biden about some long-ago comments he made about women in the workplace.
Most women have to work to provide for their kids. Many women want to be working to provide for their communities
you,
and to
Senator,
help people.
Let
so
the Vice President
either
respond
you don't
to,
believe
you.
It today or... What did you mean when you said it then?
I was deeply involved in making sure there the equal pay amendments. I was deeply involved in all these things. I came up with the It's On Us proposal to see to it that women were treated more decently on college campuses. You came to Syracuse University with me and said it was wonderful. I'm passionate about the concern making sure women are treated equally. I don't know what's happened except that you're now running for president.
But when they were not attacking each other, the Democrats were eager to turn their fire on President Trump, including Colorado Senator Michael Bennett.
We've been consumed by a president who frankly doesn't give a damn about your kids or mine. Mr. President, kids belong in classrooms, not cages.
Biden also went after Trump on some of his recent controversial comments on race and diversity.
So, Mr. President, let's get something straight. We love it. We are not leaving it. We are here to stay, and we're certainly not going to leave it to you.
Democrats debate next in September, and there could be fewer contenders on stage because of tighter qualifying rules. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
A plan that does not cover everyone, I think, is without excuse.
This news break from VOA Asia. South Korea's spy agency on Thursday told lawmakers that a North Korean diplomat who went into hiding in Italy last year is now under protection outside the country. National Intelligence Service officials told lawmakers in a closed-door briefing that Jo Song-gil, North Korea's former acting ambassador to Italy, has left Italy and is being protected somewhere. This is VOA Asia. In India's northern state of Himachal Pradesh, a burgeoning monkey population poses a huge threat to agriculture, prompting many to abandon farming. Displaced by shrinking forest and rapid growth of urban centers, the animals raid farms in search of food, destroying crops worth millions of dollars. Agriculture experts are teaching farmers how to overcome the problem. Anjana Pasricha reports how Mangru village in the Himalayan state has benefited.
The farmers at this workshop are learning how to end their battle with monkeys that routinely ravage their fields.
In the day, we roam around with dogs and we use an air gun. Then they run off quickly. Otherwise, it's difficult to keep the monkeys away.
They learn that growing herbs instead of traditional crops such as rice offers a solution. Monkeys do not attack crops like aloe vera, a plant with medicinal properties. And they fetch better profits due to a booming market for herbs like aloe. In India, the herbal product industry is worth $4
billion.
We teach farmers the kind of crop they can grow according to the soil and the water in that area, what is the demand in the market, and how he can increase his income 2 or 3 times per acre. For example, the Sarpganda herb, growing here, gives farmers 8 to 10 times the profit compared to wheat.
Experts have shortlisted over 100 herbs that could be planted on about 40% of the farmland where villagers gave up cultivating crops. Some have already greened their fields. Bipin Kumar, who has covered 2.5 hectares with herbs so far, has found the lower Himalayas particularly suitable for these crops.
I still have a lot of vacant land which I will gradually cultivate because I'm getting a good market. I'm learning about other herbs that I can grow and earn good profits.
It is not easy for everyone to change planting patterns handed down generations. So far, 300 farmers in the state have switched to growing herbs.
The ones who are successful are those who have entrepreneurship, those who can innovate. For example, they can practice intercropping and plant herbs along with other crops.
Watching their success, even older farmers are considering turning to herbs to ensure that their labor is rewarded.
I will have to turn to whatever crops the animals don't eat and take care of that crop.
That's the message going out from workshops like this one. There is a way to stay ahead of the monkeys. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Himachal Pradesh.
Leading UN agencies are urging governments to adopt family-friendly policies to encourage mothers to breastfeed their babies at home and at work. The World Health Organization and United Nations Children's Fund says breastfed babies have the best chance of enjoying a healthy, productive life. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva as World Breastfeeding Week gets underway.
Health experts agree both mothers and babies reap tremendous benefits from breastfeeding. They say nursing mothers run lower risks of getting ovarian cancer, breast cancer, and type 2 diabetes. For babies, there are both short-term and long-term benefits. They say mother's milk supports healthy brain development in babies and boosts their immune systems so they can better fight off infections. A UN survey finds wealthier countries have the lowest breastfeeding rates in the world, with fewer than 25% babies being exclusively breastfed. This compares with Rwanda, where nearly 90% of babies are breastfed, and other countries such as Burundi and Sri Lanka, which have high rates of well over 80%. Technical officer in WHO's nutrition department, Lawrence Grummer-Strawn, tells VOA children in the richer countries would enjoy long-term benefits from breastfeeding.
Babies who are breastfed are actually less likely to become obese when they're older children. They have lower risks of SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome. They have lower risk of leukemia. And in low-income countries, it reduces risks of respiratory infections and diarrhea that are some of the big killers of children.
WHO reports increasing breastfeeding could prevent 823,000 deaths in children under 5 every year and 20,000 annual deaths from breast cancer. Additionally, Grummer-Strawn says a World Bank analysis finds investing in increasing breastfeeding would produce huge returns.
They estimated for every dollar that is spent to promote, protect, and support breastfeeding, $35 would be saved in economic gains around the world. The overall estimate is that on an annual basis, we lose $302 billion in global productivity because of the lack of breastfeeding.
WHO and UNICEF are calling on governments to support breastfeeding by enacting paid maternity leave for a minimum of 18 weeks, as well as paid paternity leave to encourage shared caring of children on an equal basis. They say employers should support nursing mothers returning to work by providing them with a private, hygienic space for breastfeeding and expressing and storing milk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day and your weekend.